In this podcast lecture, I discuss the William Wordsworth sonnet, "The World Is Too Much With Us, Late and Soon." I also talk about the technique of anaphora and the rhetorical technique of pathos, and I talk about some other readings related to the theme of the sonnet. This week's readings are ones that you will be required to know for the exam. The exam will be a 2-hour timed writing situation in which you write an essay. You'll need to write a critical response essay answering a question, focusing on the reading. The topic for your exam will be provided at the beginning of the 2-hour period. So in the video lectures on Screencast-O-Matic, I introduce a number of things that you can use to analyze the readings. One of the techniques is anaphora. Anaphora means the repetition of something at the beginning of something else. So if someone repeats a phrase 2 or 3 times at the beginning of their sentences, that is anaphora. For example, Martin Luther King's example in his speech, "I Have a Dream," he says repeatedly, "Let freedom ring." So let's listen to that briefly.
From every mountainside, let freedom ring, and if America is to be a great nation, this must become true. And so let freedom ring. From the prodigious hilltops of New Hampshire, let freedom ring. From the mighty mountains of New York, let freedom ring. From the heightening Alleghenies of Pennsylvania, let freedom ring. From the snow-capped Rockies of Colorado, let freedom ring. From the curvaceous slopes of California. But not only that, let freedom ring from Stone Mountain of Georgia.
So as you can see, "let freedom ring" is the phrase that he repeats, and that's the anaphora in Martin Luther King's very famous "I Have a Dream" speech. The poem by William Wordsworth that is assigned for this week uses anaphora as well. At the end of the poem, look at the last 3 lines. He says, and I quote, "So might I, standing on this pleasant lea, have glimpses that would make me less forlorn, have sight of Proteus rising from the sea." William Wordsworth repeats the structure of have glimpses, have sight. So the question for you would be, what effect on the reader or listener does this repetition have? What's the poet emphasizing to us? What kind of effect does the anaphora have on us? When you do a rhetorical analysis of a text, you're basically looking at how persuasive the text is. You want to ask, how is this text, this reading, having an effect on me? And this is the same question that we ask for many different types of texts. Of course, a poem is a totally different kind of text than an article by Bertrand Russell or a book by Celeste Headlee. But at the same time, the poem is basically doing the same kind of thing as a nonfiction article. It is trying to persuade us of a particular idea. You might call that idea a theme. So what is the theme of this sonnet by Wordsworth? Before I get into this idea of theme, let's briefly review who Wordsworth is and what the context of this poem is. William Wordsworth was a well-known romantic poet. The romantic movement has nothing to do with love, really. It's a philosophical movement that happens in the late 18th and early 19th century in Europe. It's called romantic for a few different reasons. First, the word roman in French, was used to refer to novels. Novels were written in native languages, indigenous European languages, by which I mean English and French and German and Spanish, as opposed to having been written in Latin. Latin is not an indigenous language. It was the language of culture and religion in the 15th century, 16th century. Writing novels in those languages was a novelty in that period. So writing novels in English in the 17th and 18th century was kind of a novelty, because they would have been used to reading things in Latin up until, say, the 16th century. So writing novels in one's indigenous language led to people in Europe writing things that they thought were perhaps more authentic and more modern than things written in Latin. The Romantic period came to be seen as a time where people had started doing things differently than the Renaissance or the Classical period. In novels of that time, writers dealt with things that seemed new at the time, including romantic love, a new interest in nature, and an interest in spirits and spirituality. That is, an interest in God and gods outside of an interest in religion. The innocence and purity of children was also celebrated, whereas before, children had been seen as rather stupid and uncultured. The French novelist Rousseau writes a novel about a child, Émile, in which he praises the innocence of children. To be honest, Rousseau knew next to nothing about real children, but nevertheless, his novel does bring to light some interesting things about the innocence of children. Getting back to that sonnet, perhaps you will see some of the things I have been mentioning about Romanticism. In this poem, you see an emphasis on nature. The poet mentions the sea, the wind, nature, the moon, flowers. All these things are elements of nature. Also, you will see the poet mentions that he'd like to be, quote, a pagan suckled in a creed outworn. Suckled means breastfed, so he is referring to himself as a baby brought up in a very natural way. As an aside, I should comment here that when he uses the word pagan, he is referring to the Romans and Greeks and their religion. We can see this because he mentions the god Proteus and Triton. Proteus was an ancient Greek god of seas and rivers. He's known for being able to change his form. Wordsworth certainly does not believe in Proteus, but he really, really likes the idea of Proteus, and he likes it more than what he considers his own rather restrictive form of Christianity. If you want to read more about Proteus, I've included a link in the module. Wordsworth is almost certainly aware of classical myths where Proteus is mentioned. He would have been well aware of Ovid's reference to Proteus, for example, in Book 8. Ovid says, quote, "There are others who are allowed to transmute into many shapes. You, for instance, Proteus, inhabitant of the earth encircling sea. A moment ago they saw you as a young man, then as a lion, now as a raging boar, then as a serpent. They fear to touch, and in a moment horns revealed you as a bull. Often you might have appeared as a stone, often also as a tree. Sometimes you formed the likeness of running water and became a river. Sometimes fire, water's opposite." So Proteus is a very changeable classical figure. Another rhetorical technique of persuasion is pathos. Pathos is the evocation of emotion in the reader or listener. In this poem, then, you would ask, what sort of emotion does the reader feel when they read the poem? It's really up to you to say what emotion you feel, but you must then also say what words make you feel this emotion. For example, let's say I think this poem makes me feel sad. In that case, I would say that the words, quote, "we have given our hearts away" is what makes me feel quite sad. This idea that we have something and we have lost it, that's sad. When we say we have given our hearts away, there is the idea of love and loss, like you loved something and you lost it. We often say we gave our heart to another to indicate that we love something, and we say we lost our heart to someone, indicating that we fell in love with them. Another emotion that I feel is a kind of worry or fear. When the poet says we are out of tune, to me this suggests there is something wrong in the world. Something is out of balance. I hate listening to music that is off-key or out of tune, for example, and this is exactly the metaphor the poet is using. In fact, this metaphor of music and being in tune or out of tune is a really ancient one. It goes back to ancient Greek cosmology, the view that the world is made up of planets that create music, beautiful heavenly music. They create it by their orderly movement. The planets move, and they make music when they move. just like an instrument makes music when you move its strings or its keys. But if something goes wrong with the universe, then the music goes off key. And that is exactly what is happening here in the poem. So this is what I find kind of worrying in some ways. But I want to finish this particular podcast by discussing the second line of the sonnet. Wordsworth says, "Getting and spending, we lay waste our powers." This phrase, "getting and spending," is exactly the same phrase that comes up in Bertrand Russell's essay. Bertrand Russell says, "Broadly speaking, it is held that getting money is good and spending money is bad." And in fact, what Russell wants to point out to us is that maybe spending money is not so bad. Maybe consumption is actually a really important part of what we do in society. And what Russell means by consumption is enjoying things and being happy. So he says we should spend more time focusing on how we consume things and how we are happy, how we enjoy things. Spend more time spending money or spending time rather than thinking about how to produce that money and how to produce the time that we have. So to sum up, in this lecture, I talked a little bit about anaphora. I discussed William Wordsworth and the Romantic movement, and I looked at pathos, and I gave an example of anaphora and an example of pathos in the sonnet for this week. And I've reminded you that you need to study the readings this week because they're going to be on the exam. So that's all for now.